This podcast is in no way affiliated with the upcoming production or Deborah Harkness. All views expressed are solely our own.
It begins with absence and desire. It begins with blood and fear. It begins with the discovery of witches.
Welcome to episode 19 of the All Souls Podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer.
So Summer and I are thrilled to welcome another of the voices of the universe of All Souls, the All Souls universe. And most recently, I should say the first time, the premiere of her voice in our beloved fan universe is, of course, with the audio narration of The World of All Souls. Let's give a huge All Souls podcast welcome to Saskia Modafeld.
Hello.
Hello, Saskia.
Yay.
It's so good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, we're so honored to have you. Now, I have to ask, did I mispronounce your name?
No, you got it right, I think. Say it again, one more time.
Saskia Modafeld.
Yes, you're
okay.
Right.
Is it Dutch?
It is Dutch.
I studied German, so I kind of recognize the Dutch, although I do not
speak
it.
The double A is the giveaway.
Well, and the Feld is like Feld, but not with an F.
Exactly. Yeah, but you did a great job. Most people cannot get it.
Well, thank you very much. The reason we have you here, of course, is to pick your brain and also welcome you into the All Souls universe. And we're so excited because rarely, well, we can't say for every single series throughout the world since audiobooks started, but it's typical that the same voice, if you can, remains consistently throughout a series. Now, The World of All Souls is a companion book, obviously not part of the trilogy or the series, but it is a new addition. And to that, I say welcome. That's amazing. But I have to say, I have to like kind of fangirl geek for a second. When I heard that it was going to be read by someone named Saskia Modafeld, I thought, hold the phone. How do I know that name? Where is this from? I am not making this up. I swear, because it's such an unusual name. It's not a common one.
Yeah, not at all.
That I'm like, okay, and she's an audiobook narrator. It has to be the same one. So I quickly checked out my reading history from the library. And sure enough, I got to say, the Alice Network shook me. The book itself, the story, of course, is amazing. But oh my gosh, your performance, it wasn't a reading. Your performance, chilling.
Thank you so much. That was like one of my favorite experiences, narrating experiences still to this day. And I recorded that about a year ago. So that was, I'm so glad you enjoyed it. I'm so glad that the book has done so well. When I recorded it, I loved it myself. And it's so often that we go in and we do these books and we love them and then they don't get quite the audience that we want them to get. But this one really has been doing so well. And I'm so happy for Kate Quinn. And I'm so happy that people love the audiobook as well.
Oh, my experience with that made me want to go dig up her stuff as well as dig up your stuff. And here you are coming to us.
I'm actually meeting her tomorrow.
Oh,
yeah, I'm really excited. I'm going to like a panel at HarperCollins. They have her and another author that I've worked with, Jennifer Robson. They're doing like a panel together. And I was like, oh, I saw it on Facebook. I was like, I'm totally going to that. And then the people from Harper were like, do you want to be involved in this? I was like, sure. I just really want to meet Kate Quinn and Jennifer Robson, but I'll do whatever you want. Yeah, she's amazing.
I hope you share a picture of the two of you.
I will. I definitely will.
Because that would be, again, a little geek out for me.
I will. Special shout out for you. Yes. Well, I'm so glad that you listened to that. I'm sorry for the New York City sirens. You can probably hear from my side. I'm so glad that you love the Alice Network. That's like one of my all-time favorites. So makes me very happy.
Oh, it was like, it was disturbing, but amazing and chilling and suspenseful and sad mm-hmm. and joy. Oh, it was just, it was yeah. so much. Okay, we've gone off topic slightly, but really not too much, because even though the reason, the link that the nexus that brought you to our show was, of course, your narration of The World of All Souls. But then once mm-hmm. I made that connection of, you know, the one time I had heard you perform, it really freaked me out. I'm like, I don't know that people know how lucky we are. This is a little bit like, it's a little bit not intimidating, but just extra special.
Oh, thank you.
So yeah, so even though we just spent a few minutes talking about the Alice Network, it really is germane, because this interview is not about The World of All Souls. It will come up, but this interview is all about you.
Oh, thank you.
No, my gosh, stop. No pressure. Okay, so let's start off with the planned menu this evening. How did you get started as a voice artist?
So I went to school in New York. I went to NYU and studied acting. And then I got out of school and was like, oh my God, this is really hard, like everyone tells you. And I was managing a restaurant and kind of trying to figure out what I was going to do. And I happened to see a posting online, which is almost never happens in the audiobook world, for a New Zealand book. They needed a young New Zealand female narrator. And obviously was having a hard time finding it in New York City. So I'm actually originally from New Zealand. I had a Kiwi accent till I was like 14. And so I auditioned for that and booked that and was like, oh my gosh, this is a real job that I could potentially turn into a career. I never imagined, you know, being in the place I am now, but I sort of slowly from there just worked really hard and hustled and networked. And I kind of got in a little bit before the audiobook boom, when a lot of other people realized that being a narrator was really cool. So I was lucky to kind of get in and meet a lot of people. And yeah, the rest is history. But that was how I first discovered the voiceover world.
Now, you said you were trained as an actress, and that is something that we found in our interviews with the golden voice of Davina Porter, as well as mm-hmm. with Jennifer Iketa herself. So mm-hmm. that seems to be a common theme. So when you were studying acting, you did mention that it was not something that you expected to have a mm-hmm. career or make a career out of voiceover or out of narration. But was there anything in your training as an actor that specifically helps prepare you? So not just for performance, for character, maybe for breath, or maybe the class about breath, breathing, you know, mm-hmm. filling a room, etc. What, if anything, from your specific training at NYU, do you feel helped prepare you for voice narrator work?
I think that, I mean, so much of audiobook narration in particular, which is so different from the rest of the voiceover world, commercial and that sort of thing, is actually like an actor's dream, because you get to do the whole thing yourself. honestly, we didn't have, I mean, I didn't take any classes in college that were at all related to voiceover, but I think just being a good actor and kind of being able to get into a text and get into characters really helps. I also listened to a lot of audiobooks when I was a kid, which I think kind of, and I read a lot, which helped. And I think for me also, I mean, I'm lucky to like have a good instrument in terms of just like stamina and that sort of thing. I didn't have to train too hard for that. But, and then just like, sounds corny, but like life in general, like growing up abroad in different places, it just really helped me in terms of what I do a lot, which is like accent work and that sort of thing. So kind of it was like an all-around package that NYU definitely like, you know, strengthened me in stage acting, text analysis, all that sort of thing. And then I guess it all kind of came together and worked well, translated well to audiobook narration, which was very lucky for me.
Now, you mentioned that you're actually going to meet one of the authors you worked with recently tomorrow. Do you generally have a lot of contact with the authors whose books you read?
It really depends. Sometimes I do not, I'd say probably the majority of the time, I do not have any contact with them. Often I'll like find them on Twitter and friend them and follow them just so I feel like a little bit connected to them. But that's the majority of the time. It's all the publisher and the producer. And then there's some publishers that like you to email the narrator, the author to see if there's anything that they would like you to know before you start recording. But for the most part, all the information comes to you through the publisher or the producer, especially when you're working with the big publishers. I think they like to kind of play middleman with the authors, but we're always free to ask them. And pretty much all the authors that I've connected with are really excited to chat. And so that's why I do like to find them on social media and kind of give them a shout out, because they are all, you know, the reason we are able to do our job so well because of their work. So yeah, I like having that connection with them.
What about character choice? You said sometimes you may reach out, especially if the publisher asks you to see if there's anything specific that they want to be brought out in the performance. Have you yourself ever had a chance to reach out to an author because of something you feel you strongly needed to know that could affect a character, whether it's voicing or timbre, et cetera?
In general, I feel like I usually have pretty free range. There's some things, like, for example, I'm working on a book right now that is an Australian book, but it's set in LA and it's first person. So it's a kind of cozy mystery series, really fun. And it's set in LA. There's a lot of American characters, but the protagonist is Australian. And I felt really strongly that the narration needed to be done in an Australian accent as well, in order to keep in line with the protagonist's accent and stuff like that. I'll like check on, because sometimes authors will have strong feelings or publishers will have strong feelings. But in general, I'm pretty lucky. We're given pretty free rein. And if we don't hear anything from the publisher, our general assumption, at least my general assumption, is, you know, take what I can find in the text and then, you know, bring it to life myself. Like for the Alice Network, I had not spoken to Kate Quinn at all before I did it. I wish I had, because now I, you know, would have loved to chat with her while I was working on it. But also, it was probably good for me to just take it and make it my own. So, you know, it works. I think a lot of the authors have respect for what we do the same way as we have respect for what they do. And they trust that their words will be enough for us to kind of run with and bring it to life.
Have you ever had any specific authors like request you, or is it mostly an audition kind of a thing? Or
yeah. So it's usually like one of a couple options. Usually either you're asked to audition for it. And in that case, with the big publishers, they usually will gather, you know, they have their roster and they'll say, these five people are really good voice, I think are really good fit for this. And then they'll submit those to the author for approval. Sometimes they don't have to get author approval, in which case they'll say, like, I think Saskia is really great for this, and they'll just offer it to you. Other times they'll just offer it to you because an author has requested you. So yeah, it works. It tends to be less of an audition process than you would think. Like there are certain things you audition for, but for the most part, it's, especially once you're in with the publishers and they know you, they know what you can do. So they'll pitch you to the author usually.
A little bit about your process. When you first get a manuscript or a file, what does it typically look like? Discuss that and your process for going from receiving it to prepping it for the first day in the recording studio.
So usually you will get a manuscript when I first started, it was all on paper. Which was crazy, because you would just get like either a book, which was nice, or you get literally like a stack of paper and you're like, how am I supposed to prep this when I'm riding the subway? But now it's all on PDFs, which is great, because I have my iPad with my iAnnotate app, and I can have a bunch of books on there at once, and it all comes in at once. Sometimes they'll send you a prep script, which means that technically the final that you will be narrating from is not in yet, but they want to give you time to prepare. And sometimes that final script won't come until the last minute. Occasionally you get scripts in general, like you don't get to see it until really last minute. If it's a rushed project, But usually you have time to prep it. And I have my iAnnotate app, which lets you, can highlight things, you can search words, you can kind of do a lot of stuff in there to make it easier for you when you get in the booth. But in general, I'm a pretty light prepper in terms of actually like marking stuff on my manuscript. I like to keep it pretty fresh for when I record. So I read it and take it in, but I don't do a lot of like color coding or, you know, and some narrators work really well with having different voices have be highlighted in different colors or having notes marked on their script. And for me, that just kind of distracts me from telling the story. It doesn't actually help me the way it can help people. So I find that I, as long as I read it and really take it in, then, you know, you do the research in terms of words you don't know, or which for All Souls, there were a lot of words we had to, luckily I had a director on that. So he was with me trying to do all the research. And yeah, so it's, but they usually get it to you all in one piece. So you can really, you know, everyone wants you to have as much time as possible. There are definitely some last minute, I've had some times when I get the script the night before, but that's never ideal for anyone.
Would you say that this prep, the prep you did for the World of All Souls was significantly different than the prep you do for a regular like novel? Because I mean, there are sections I was afraid were going to be, because it's a like a glossary in some parts.
I mean, it is. Yeah, it is. It was a real mountain of a project. And it was a very last minute project, which meant that we had to really hustle to get it done. I was actually going on vacation. I left from the studio with the suitcase to my plane to New Zealand. So it was like really crunch time to get it all in. And it's a hard manuscript to actually, it was hard. I think it was hard to judge how long it was going to take us because there are so many pictures and the writing's laid out in a different way. So it's not like a normal manuscript. The publisher will usually give you a fairly accurate estimate of how long it's going to be and therefore how many days it'll take you. This was a little, we were a little, you know, we had to kind of put a lot of stuff in PDF form, which had already been planned, which was good because we wouldn't have had enough time to record it all. And we were lucky we had Steve West do some of the quotation sections. So yeah, it was definitely a monster of a project, but we got through it and I got on my airplane and had a big drink.
Oh, goodness. So after you've got your project, got your manuscript, and you've done your prep, and you head into the studio on that first day, mm-hmm. I should say not first day, what's your typical day in a studio like to record? Like, what does it look like? How long is it? What do you bring with you? How do you like to set up your little area? Do you stand? Do you sit? Etc.
Yeah. So I work probably like 80% of the time in professional studios in New York, and about 20% of the time, it can vary depending on the month, but I'm at home in my little, I won't even call it a studio because it's literally like under a blanket in my room. It's a little rigged up space, which is where I recorded the Owls Network. So it works, but it's not the most comfortable. So, but when I go into a studio, I'll have an engineer and I'll always have an engineer. And then sometimes I will have a director, which is always wonderful. The more people you can like have working with you, the better, because you've got more ears on it. You know, you're not all alone in a little box by yourself. But I'll go in and I usually wear really comfy clothing because I know it's going to be a long day. I mean, like a long time sort of sitting still. I like to sit when I record, mainly because I'm sure if there was a studio where it was easy for me to stand and sit without having to reconfigure the mic and do everything every time, I'd probably want to do more of that. But it can be kind of a process to get the microphone adjusted, and you know, so I tend to sit. I usually work about, when I'm in studio, it's usually about 10 to 5, which is about an average day. And I drink a lot of tea and bring my water and my iPad and my charger. But other than that, I'm pretty, yeah, I don't like have a lot of stuff that I bring with me or like a real routine that I do. I mean, I always eat breakfast because the stomach noises are real and the worst. Right around 11, you'll start to get like rumbling noises. And then you always want to have a pillow in the studio with you to put in front of your stomach to kind of swallow the noises before lunch. And usually around 2 or 3 p.m., everyone has to stand up and like jump around and drink some coffee because it's like the low point of the day when everyone's falling asleep after lunch. But yeah, no, it's, I love being in studio. When I'm at home, it's a lot more distracting. I usually work longer, but get the same amount done. So I'll work from like 10 to 6 or 7. And, you know, because you get distracted, there's the fridge full of food and there's, you know, something you want to go out and get a coffee or you want to search the internet. You don't have anyone like keeping on you. So I definitely enjoy being in studio more because it just makes me more productive, which makes me able to do more work.
Are there any specific genres that you prefer over others?
I'd say my favorite are historical fiction. And I really love, I mean, I was like a big fantasy reader, fantasy sci-fi reader. Now I really rarely have time to read for pleasure, but that's what I would like to read. And also mysteries and thrillers I really love. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing that I hate doing.
Not even reading glossaries and dictionaries. And
not even reading glossaries because that, I got to learn. So I got to like, I mean, the nice thing was with All Souls, like I got like a, like I had the best intro of like getting all the info down. I was like, man, I haven't even read these books, the trilogy, but I feel like I'm getting a really comprehensive, straightforward first look into this world, which was really nice.
You mentioned when you go to the studio, you wear comfortable clothing. Do you avoid certain clothing or certain fabrics that might brush up against each other and kind of make noises? Is there something that you have found to be more comfortable and quiet fabric?
I definitely like spend most of my studio time in my active wear, like my workout clothes, just because it's comfortable and like, you know, soft leggings. But the one thing I can think of that I often like to wear to the studio, but I always take off before I get in the booth is my Lululemon little zip up jackets because I love wearing them. They're super comfy, but when anything brushes against them, it makes like a little fabric noise. So that's something I found out that I cannot wear in the studio. Other than that, I mean, today I wore a dress and everyone at the studio was like, wow, you're really dressed up today. I was like, it's just hot out and I'm wearing a little summer dress. But people usually are used to seeing me in my leggings and, you know, t-shirt. So it's, you know, you want to be comfortable because you're sitting in a booth that also the temperature is different at every studio. It's either boiling hot or freezing. So you never know. So often you got to bring a sweatshirt with you because they like to crank the AC. And, you know, I feel bad for the engineers because they have it even worse because we're at least in like this small box that is not getting a lot of air. And so if the AC is, if it's freezing in my booth, it's Arctic outside for the engineer.
Have you ever read a book that you did a recording for that you didn't care for?
Sure. Yeah. Definitely. Yes.
And we'll that's that. My answer.
That's my answer. Yes, absolutely. I've done a lot of books. You can't love them all. But someone loves them all. So that, you know, you have to remember that even if you're going through something that's like really dragging and not your cup of tea, you have to remember that there's someone, whoever's listening to them chose it because it's probably something that they enjoy. So it kind of, that helps you put it in perspective a little bit.
In a typical year, how many books might you record?
I usually do about between 60 and 70, like recent in the past couple of years. So I'd say like I got really busy, the past 3 years have been really busy. You know, the first year I did one book, the second year I did 7 books, you know, so it was slow, but now I do this full time and often I will, be in on weekends, like when we have things that are a rush but this year, I don't know. I'm taking like more time off this year. So maybe it'll probably be a little less. Also, that it also includes books that I do co-narrate with other people that are shorter, multicasts. But that's like when I've looked at everything, it's usually between like 60 and 70 projects, which is awesome.
Do you do predominantly books where you narrate by yourself, or do you ever do like joint projects where it's you and several narrators, or you and just one other?
Yeah, I do predominantly. I find that I do a lot of solo narrations, but also I've definitely done plenty of dual narrations where there's two of us. And then also I've done multicasts, which are really fun. I've done like some multicasts with friends of mine, which is really nice. So you kind of like, even though you're not recording at the same time, you get to see your names up there together, which is fun.
How do you handle grammatical mistakes that are in the manuscript?
Well, when I'm in studio with a director or an engineer, we usually stop and are like, that doesn't sound right. Like, what's wrong with this sentence? Or clearly, sometimes it's clearly a misprint or a, you know, a typo. And in that case, you just, I mean, some places have their own ways that they want you to do it. In general, for me, the rule that I find pretty consistently works is just if it doesn't make sense and you can make sense of it without changing all the words, with like adding a but or adding a one word, or, you know, if someone types the word can twice, you can take one of them out. They, as long as you're doing what's pretty obvious, they appreciate you doing that in the studio, because otherwise they'd have to come back to you with pickups once they realize that it was an error. So usually I just take it upon myself to make the correction if it's a clear correction. There's other times where the engineer and I are like, well, this is super weird, but it could be on purpose. So we just leave it and we'll wait and see if it comes back to us when we do corrections.
So you mentioned earlier that you're originally from New Zealand, so you clearly have a Kiwi accent. You clearly also have an American Standard accent. If in your list of accents you perform, what would you say are, well, just list them all. What are the ones you're known for?
Well, the ones that I do like would do entire books in would be the American, obviously, Kiwi, Australian. I do a lot of British books. Like in the Alice Network, each chapter was alternating between an American character and a British character, which was really fun. And I lived in France. I moved to France when I was a teenager and lived there for 8 years. So I speak French and can do French accent. All the European ones I've done a lot: Scottish, Irish, Russian, German, Spanish. Scandinavian I've had to do, which is really fun. And then I've had to do some really difficult ones. Like I had to do a Welsh accent for a hero in a romance, a historical fiction romance once. And that was a hard one to learn. And I had to do a Ugandan accent once. And yeah, so, but definitely I feel super comfortable British, Australian, and New Zealand and American. South African's fun.
All the colonies, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, goodness. With this kind of work, as you said, you're going to be working in different accents or different a certain accent, especially a new one, could be called for, you know, three brand new ones could be called for in your next project.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, if it's not one of those top three or four that you are super strong in, the ones that you do the most, the ones that could be considered along the lines of your native or native-like, what do you do to keep up your accents, to keep practicing? Do you have coaching? Do you have, what does your team look like? What is your support system?
Well, I do not do coaching. I think I just have a really good ear. I'm lucky. And if something comes up that I'm really stumped on, I will go to YouTube, which is actually such a good service for like when you have the basis of being able to pick things up easily. It's a really helpful tool to like stay in it. For certain accents, I have like, I'll come up with a phrase or something that'll help me to get into it, like where the accent is very thick or it hits certain, you know, the vowels or consonants, however they're different. But with most of the things I do, which tend to be like European, like other than the ones that I would narrate an entire book in, I'm also super comfortable in like the French and the German and the, you know, other European accents. those like just somehow come out of my mouth. luckily for me, but yeah, I think there's been a couple times when I thought about reaching out to, like, I know a dialect coach and thought about being like, can you help me with this very obscure accent? And I, through like talking with directors, and they'll often send me clips or things, just kind of researching, listening to, there's like a lot of, you can find kind of coaching things online where someone will take you through an accent. So that's generally as far as I go in terms of looking for support in that field. But I have four sisters, and all of them do like funny accents and are really good at accents. So I think it must be in our blood somehow.
Interesting that you all have. So if you all are able to reproduce them or mimic, and you, that means you all have to some extent really good ears. Mm-hmm. Are any of you by chance musical?
We definitely all played instruments when we were young. And we all sang. So I guess, yeah, I mean, we were all like pretty musical when we were young. Now that we're older, and I don't know that any of us have kept it up, but, my youngest sister, who's 10 or 11 years younger than me, she moved back to New Zealand at a much younger age after living in France. So she actually has a New Zealand accent, and the other four of us have American accents. So we're all over the place.
Do you have any accents you'd say you're not good at?
Not good at.
Because everyone's got one.
Jamaican is really hard. I had to do that the other day. I had like in the middle of a book for like a scene, like a brief scene, there was like the Jamaican nurse. And I was like, oh my God, this is just, I'm just going to have to do it and hope for the best. That one's hard. Like if I really listen to a lot of it, I can get it, but that's a really hard one for me. And what else?
Well, because it's hard sometimes to not sound like a caricature.
Exactly. Like you really want to make sure to do an, and also you want to do, even with the ones that I do, like even when I do a New Zealand accent or an Australian accent, you have to do like a audiobook version of it where it's authentic, but it's subtle, and you don't want it to be too thick because it's, or like Scottish. When I do like the Scottish accent for a book, it's like no one wants to listen to a thick Scottish brogue for 10 hours. That would be impossible. So you do have to like, you do have some liberty of making it like an, like I like to call an audiobook version of itself, which is listenable. But for characters, you have a little more, you know, a little more room to play around for certain books. You kind of have to take it on a book by book basis.
What about emotion? How do you handle recording very emotional scenes?
I get really energized by those scenes. So they kind of like, and I get really into them. So it is almost like, I don't want to say like out of body experience, but I almost like, I go through it like very focused and get to the end of it. And I'm like, okay, I did, like, those are the easy scenes in a way for me, because they're like, especially when they're written well, they are like, they just flow out of you in like a very musical way. And I do often liken when you're narrating and you get, and the writing is just perfect, it really does come out of you like music, and it's like so satisfying. So I find like a lot of the really well-written emotional scenes are actually pretty easy, easier than some of the more mundane scenes that you have to do.
Or maybe easier than like, you know, graphic sex scenes, which I don't know if you have any books you've had to do them in, but some of them are great and some of them are really bad.
Oh yeah, totally. No, like those, some of them I've had like, I mean, we've all of us narrators have done erotica, whether under our name or under pseudonym. Like it's such a huge part of the business, and it's so popular, and there's so many fans that love it. And there are a lot of really great books in romance and erotica that like actually are really well written and have really interesting characters. And then there's some where you're like, oh my gosh, this is like a 20-page sex scene and I just can't like I can't. So just depends.
Sometimes it feels like there's a competition going on to come up with the silliest name for a penis. Mm-hmm. Like it's,
yes.
You're like, okay, I haven't heard that one before. Definitely. That's a new one.
Yeah. Or they, every time it comes up, it's a different word and you're like, okay, I'm just going to keep counting how many different words you can come up with. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I've had some, I should have been keeping track because I feel like I've had some really, like there are times when my engineer will be like, I just screenshot a picture of that sentence to my friend because that is amazing. Like you would, there are some lines where you're like, I cannot believe that you wrote that and published that on a page. It's so funny and terrible, but it makes it fun. And that's why it's nice to have an engineer in the session with you, because if you're alone and you get things like that, you're like, oh, there's no one to share it with. But when you're with an engineer, it's, and especially doing like the, a lot of the romance and erotica books, when they're not as great, it's like nice to have someone to like chuckle about it with. Yeah.
So when you're performing an emotional scene that's like, you know, someone's, well, whether it's screaming or whether it's just high, high emotion, as far as, you know, there's, it, someone's died or you're at a funeral, you know, something like where you're either wailing or what the character is wailing or just crying intensely. Obviously, when you're a stage performer, you can let it out. Behind a mic, you have to be a little more held back. You can't like blow out your speakers or, you know, kill your listeners. How do you handle that? Do you just naturally pull back, or is there something, a technique that you use to still affect the same effect, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. When you're, again, when you're with an engineer, your engineer will be like, oh, that was a little hot. Like you definitely blew out the mic on that. We need to do it again. When you're by yourself, like technically you, I can see my waveform, so I can kind of keep track of that. But like, yeah, you really have to, I mean, it takes kind of learning how to do it, but you do have to develop like a way of shouting or a way of wailing that doesn't do that. And I think that's just like kind of a placement in like how you can like, it's the same way when someone's like shouting from far away and you kind of have to like place your voice in a different spot to make, you know, you're not going to like get up and go stand behind your chair and do the line from across the room. Or, you know, if it says like his voice was muffled behind the wall, you're not going to like go stand behind a wall and record the, you know, so you have to just kind of find ways of like slightly turning your head or kind of pulling your chin back a little bit, or just there's kind of physical ways you can do it, like, but still being there in your body. But yeah, you kind of, yeah, it's finding like that happy medium where it still does have carry the weight, but it's not like, yeah, blowing out your listeners' ears, which I think is takes time to learn, you know, and practice.
I hope I'm not beating a dead horse because I find this fascinating. Specifically, say it's, if the equivalent were on a stage, it would be a crying scene. You would legit be crying or weeping on stage. How do you do something like that? Because as we all know, unless you're just extremely blessed or something, and maybe I just don't know. If you cry, if anyone cries, it messes with your nose. It closes your throat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't do that. Like you can't, like there are times when I maybe like get the emotion will get me like in my eye, like I'll get like a little tear, but like if you're actually crying, you like have to stop and redo it because it, you sound stuffed up, and that's not, I guess kind of in the same way of like that I said, there's an audiobook version of an accent. There's like an audiobook version of crying where like you need to still be like intelligible. I'll usually kind of like, it has to like come into your voice. I don't know. It's hard to explain. I guess you really have to use like pitch and placement in your, like in your, I guess it, for me, it comes, I think it comes like more into my throat, like the back of my throat kind of. And that for me is like my sound. That's like, I'm crying or I don't know. Also, I guess like you can get big as long as you're not, you know, blowing out your mic, but yeah, it is hard and I can't really describe it. Like it's something that you learn while you're doing it, but I don't know that I can, like, I'm probably not really describing it accurately. I'm sorry.
I think you gave us the answer that you can, and that is that you agree that you're not sitting there crying, literally, because then you couldn't talk. But you do affect something. You express it by doing something in your throat. So you do physically make a change. It's just how to describe that change is maybe not easy.
It also depends on the character. You know, there's some characters that like clearly there's plenty of characters where if you can get quieter, you can, you know, there's that when they're crying or when they're upset, they get softer, which is helpful. So you can kind of make choices like that, which make it a little easier to, you know, kind of put the emotion into it. It doesn't have to be wailing or yelling. You can, but then there are definitely times where it's like she wailed while sobbing and you're like, oh my gosh. Well, I'm not going to do that because no one would know what the line was. But yeah. Also, they're like especially when you're in the studio, the guys will sometimes be like, okay, hold it. Like, you can do it again. I'm just going to adjust that. I'm just going to adjust the settings so that you can be a little bigger. So that helps. But I also do like have done video game and cartoon stuff. And when I go in there and I'm like doing a character or something, and they're like, you were working on audiobooks all day, weren't you? And I was like, yeah. They're like, you can like scream and be really loud in here. I was like, oh, okay, I can't do that in audiobooks. So it's a whole different, so that's a whole another thing. Half an hour in a cartoon session will like leave you with a blown out voice. So you don't want to do that in audiobooks.
No, and that's the thing about cartoons today. It's a lot of screaming. And I've noticed this because I have a 10-year-old, and every time she has a cartoon on, it's just screaming from the living room. And I was like, how screaming, are they enjoying this?
And usually in like a high-pitched voice, like you're trying to do a kid's voice and scream at the same time, or you're like, you know, there's like video games that'll be like in the middle of battle and you're yelling at people and it's like, oh my God, or like you're a transformer. And it's just, yeah, that is, I enjoy that less because it's often just a lot of like grunt. They do what they call reacts, where you go in and they're like, okay, make noises like you're running across a rooftop, and you just have to like make what actually end up sounding like weird like sex noises because you're like and they're like, that's great, it's perfect. And it's like all like running and jumping and landing, you know, you're like like kicking and yeah, it's really exhausting. And when you first start doing it, you're like, this is so weird. I'm so embarrassed. And the guy's like, no, this is what everyone comes in and does for their hour long session. It's just, and when you actually then go and listen to cartoons or video games, you're like, oh, there is a lot of like, you know, like just noises.
So the next time you take your friend out for coffee, you say, yes, this coffee break or coffee time was brought to you by my sex noises from the roof.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
That's so funny you say that because I was watching a movie. I was watching a movie yesterday and I don't even know what the movie was because I wasn't actually watching it. It was behind me. My back was to the TV and I looked at my boyfriend and I was like, are they having a chase scene or are they having sex? I don't understand what's happening behind me right now. Yeah.
No difference.
And he was like, kind of both. And I was like, what?
You're like, yep, sounds about right.
So you said you did like 70 books in the last year. So clearly there have to have been some bloopers.
Yeah, you know, like I always think that I need to start collecting and saving my bloopers, and I never do. But there have been some really, I can never remember them. But there's one director that I work with, and she likes to collect people's bloopers, and it's hilarious when she plays them back. Another thing that often happens, which creates good bloopers, is you like find something really funny, and then you just cannot. You cannot get past that line. And then finally, like someone in the room is like, okay, we need to move on. So you have to stop laughing on this line. and then you have to like think about something sad and be like, I'm not going to laugh on this line. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of fun is had, especially towards the end of the day when your mouth starts to go and it's harder to, and actually your brain goes before your voice. So that's why usually you start being like, why did I just say that? That is not on the page at all.
I tend to get dyslexic selectively by the end of the day, mm-hmm. where you're just like, I'm just flipping words and none of it makes sense anymore.
Oh, totally. Like all my corrections when I get them back are like, misread, misread. And I'm like, oh, those were all like, I just inverted the words and said them the other way around. Sorry. But I guess my excuse is always that I'm so into the story that I'm not really focusing on the words. I'm focusing on the storytelling, which is what we should be doing, right?
You gave us a great example of a time when there's a line, especially if it's nearest, you know, nearer the end of the day. If there's a line that something comes up and you just can't get past it and it tickles you, and then you just kind of set off for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Has there been a time or times when you've read something and it doesn't tickle you, but you still can't get past it? It frustrates you. Mm-hmm. And you get so frustrated that you just like let out a choice word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. There's like lines where you're like, this line, this bleep line will not come out of my mouth. Like, I think that's actually the thing that authors could learn from the most, which is that you can tell when there are times when I read a book and I'm like, this is great. This is, you know, so well written. And then I go to record it and it is not written. Like they clearly never read their own stuff out loud because it just does not come out of your mouth in a smooth way. And so when you get to things like that, it's like, and it's just like every line is like a mouthful. That can be really frustrating. And I often let out choice words. I also let out a lot of choice words when I'm working at home and like, dogs are barking or my neighbors are making noise and I'm literally sitting under my blanket being like, please just could you just stop vacuuming for 2 minutes so I can just finish this chapter? I will do anything. Like I just like saying that to myself. I'm like, if someone was watching me right now, they would be very amused.
You should install light bulbs in all of their houses so you can flip them on and so you can see when you're recording.
Yes.
Recording.
I've thought about like just getting a broom and be like, just like, you know, to tap on this, but like at the same time, I'm like, well, it never lasts that long. And I'm like, you just need to relax and take a break. It's probably good to take a break if you're this frustrated by it anyway, and then come back to it. So I definitely try to do that.
So as part of your routine outside, your routine for life, but you know, outside the booth, outside of prep, do you have something that works for you, like a fitness routine or like a meditation, something that kind of keeps you grounded or keeps you fit or keeps you well, whatever that means to you?
Yeah, I do. I think like the most important things to me are in terms of like, I do work out like as often as I can. And that when I do that, it makes me feel like it just re-energizes me, makes me feel great. So I definitely try to keep active, especially after sitting all day. It's like at the end of the day, you get up and if I'm at a studio, even if I don't have time for a real workout and it's just walking home instead of sitting on the subway, when you're sitting that much, you really have to take the time to like, at least I know that for my sanity, I have to take the time to be active. I also, in general, like I try to socialize, you know, I try to like see my friend. I have some really good friends who are also narrators. And it's really fun to see them and kind of like debrief and hear what they've been up to and chat about like all the gossip in the industry. Then I have my friends who are not narrators at all, who I can get together with and not talk about work at all. So it's important to me that, especially when I'm by myself in the booth all the time, I do really like to see my friends. And I work really hard when I'm in New York. I work sometimes 7 days a week, but then I take significant vacations. And that really is what keeps me able to work the way I do when I'm here.
Do you ever just get tired of your own voice? Like after 7 hours, you just kind of want to go home and be like, yeah. No one talk to me. I don't want to talk to anyone. I just need silence.
Yeah, absolutely. And like there's sometimes where, especially if I'm working on a book, that is over like 3 days in a row on the same project, I'm like, I start to, in my head, I'm like, maybe I just sound like this for everything. And I have no range, and and my voice is just always like this, and I get low, and it sounds terrible. And yeah, you get like a little bit, and like, I need to. So often I will, if I have a book that's like over 3 or 4 days, I actually try to at least have a weekend between, because if you're doing the same thing for like too much time, it can get, you can be like, oh, I'm making all the same choices and I'm doing all the same things. And is this sounding great? You know, then you check in with your engineer and they're like, nah, you sound great. So yeah, I definitely get sick of my own voice.
So it sounds like sometimes, and even if it is mental, it's still important, because a lot of times, even if something like your engineer says, no, you sound great, still, if it's going to get you down or make you worried or make you stressed, it is better to just, like you said, plan that weekend in or some kind of break in between.
Totally. Also, I think I'm lucky. I don't know how it is for other narrators, but I think I'm lucky because I have a lot of, I have a lot of variety in like in the genres that I do. I have a lot of variety in where I'm working. I'm like this week, I'm at 3 different studios for 5 days at work. And I am this week I am working on an Australian book. Today I was actually working on a project that is a multicast, and I had to do British, Australian, French, ambiguous Euro, and American. And then tomorrow I'm doing Australian, and then Thursday and Friday I'm doing British and Scottish. So it's like, I feel like I'm lucky because I get a lot of variation in my own performance. So maybe that helps me get a little less sick of my voice because it's constantly changing. But yeah, so I think and the other thing is like every project always comes to an end. So even if you're having a really hard time with a book, and when it's really hard, like I've had times where I'm like, this is a good book, but it's just like not, I'm not feeling good about it, or it's just like not coming out of my mouth the way I want it to. And then you kind of have to take a step back and be like, this is going to end, and then I'll be on to the next one and I'll deal with it. So that's the nice thing about this job. It's always something else coming.
We've talked about you, your training, your process, a little bit about your experience with the world of All Souls. Mm-hmm. Could we just begin a hint of a wrap up and ask you, as much as you can share, what might be some of your upcoming projects?
Upcoming projects and like anything in general?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay. Let me see. Let me look at my calendar. I'm getting married this summer. So I'm like really, my brain is in a million different places. So I do actually have to look at my calendar, which usually I have everything in my brain really clearly. What's coming up?
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
So that's your upcoming project. She's getting married.
That's my upcoming projects. No, I have a lot to do before then. But I have to, okay, so what am I doing? Next week I'm doing like which I just found out about today, which is also fun when that happens. I'm doing a new thriller called Maze Master. And it sounds very like Da Vinci Code-esque. At the moment I'm working on a Viking saga, kind of fantasy, which is really interesting. I am doing this Australian series that is kind of ongoing through the summer because I've broken it up. There's like 5 books and I've broken it up over about a month and a half. So I'm working on that. And I've got a new book by Lydia Kang that I'm really excited about. She writes like historical fiction, usually like mysteries and thrillers. I did a book called The Beautiful Poison for her, which is really good. And I'm doing another book for her. And then, yeah, just lots of little things. And then I'm taking a big, long vacation in August.
So what is the best way to follow you if they wanted to find you? Like a website, social media?
So I have a website. It's www.saskiamarlavel.com. I challenge you to spell that correctly. and then I'm not naturally good at social media. But I've recently been really trying to get better at it, especially on Twitter. I think Twitter is like my more professional platform. where it's mostly about audiobook and voiceover stuff. So that's probably the best place to follow. That's also linked to my website. So those two places are definitely where I will be making myself present as much as I can.
Thank you so much. So don't forget to follow Saskia on Twitter. And on Twitter, you're Saskia Audio, correct?
Yes, that's right.
And then your website is Saskia Marleveld. It's Maarleveld.
That's right.
Okay. I mean, it is right in front of me, but still.
Yeah,
my eyes were closed.
Cheater.
So definitely go and check out her website and follow her on Twitter. And if you have not listened, and even if you've read it, the listening is an entirely different experience. If you have not read it, please do yourself a favor. And whether you purchase it or get it from the library, go have a listen to the Alice Network. It will blow your mind. The story alone is crazy good, but added with this performance dimension, it just gives you the chills. It's so well performed, and it's a very harrowing of part of history. It's set during World War II, and what I will say, because it's not really a spoiler, is it's based on a true story. The woman Lily did really exist, and she ran a network of female spies in German-occupied France during World War II, and that was called the Alice Network. Is that correct?
Yep, that's right.
And if maybe that's not your genre, I guarantee you, if you go to audible.com and type in Saskia, I'm not going to pronounce her last name because I'm going to butcher it,
into
the narrator section, it will pull up her body of work available in Audible. And I guarantee you there will be something in your genre that's been read by her.
Yeah, you'll find something.
Saskia, didn't I see that I believe the awards are over with, but weren't you nominated for an Audie this year?
I was.
Oh my goodness, I'm so sorry we waited till the end. Tell us about that.
It's fine. Yeah, that was really exciting and something that I had never expected. I was nominated for an Audie for Best Female Narrator for the Alice Network. And I was nominated with four other actresses, two of whom are sort of more film, like Rachel McAdams, who everyone knows, I'm sure, who's a film actress, and Cheryl Lee, who was on Twin Peaks, and then two amazing veteran narrators, Robin Miles and Bonnie Turpin, who are wonderful. And Bonnie Turpin won, and she did an amazing performance of The Hate U Give, which was a really important and big book this year. But yeah, it was, I mean, like, honestly, I know everyone says it, like, it's an honor just to be nominated. But in this, that was something that I had never even crossed. I'd always been like, I want to get nominated for an Audie in some genre, but it never crossed my mind that I would be up for this in this category. You know, I'm still I've been doing this for a while, but I'm relatively new in terms of how many amazing narrators there are, amazing women who've been doing this for a long time, who've never even been nominated, who are phenomenal. So it was a real honor to be nominated.
I mean, that's like the Academy Award being nominated for Best Actress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really amazing.
That's the main female category. Whew. Well, like you said, win, place, show, it doesn't matter. You were nominated, and that is totally incredible. Hats off.
Thank you.
I try to watch the Audies. I try to watch the nominations each year, mm-hmm. or at least I catch the announcements after the fact. And I just look through to see if there's any name I recognize. And sometimes there will be a name and I'll say, oh, then I know of that narrator, but I don't know that book. So I have to go listen. Well, this time when I recognized the name and the book, I almost peed myself.
Me too. I was in the supermarket and I think I left. I think I bought the most random assortment of stuff because I was just piling things into my cart. I was like, I need to get out of here. I don't know what's going on. Yeah, it was awesome.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you, and
welcome again to the All Souls universe.
Thank you.
We are thrilled to have you here.
Thank you so much. I so appreciate it. And it was so fun talking with you guys.
Oh, it was our pleasure. And we hope whatever the future may bring, maybe to speak with you again someday.
Yes, that would be lovely.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. And you guys, remember, follow her on Twitter, go check out her website, and definitely go check out her body of work through Amazon, through Audible. There are many ways to find out more about Miss Saskia Marleveld. Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.